Welcome to Warriors Off Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Warriors beat writer Connor Letourneau. And as always, I'm joined today by my boss, assistant sports editor, and former Warriors beat writer, Janie Hu. So here we are, Wednesday afternoon in the San Francisco Chronicle newsroom. It's been a couple weeks. Now, that's not to say that the podcast has been off, because as you know, we upgraded a little bit last week, and Bruce Jenkins and Scott Osler came in and sat down with you and had a mock NBA All-Star draft, which was really fun to listen to. I was at practice at the time, but I got to listen to it the next day, and the banter there was great. Does anyone who's gotten any chance to spend time with either of those guys understands what they bring to the table? Not only are they great writers, but they're just good people and really fun guys to talk to. It sounded like you had a good time.
Oh, that was so much fun. Those guys are such a fountain of stories. It is literally the gift that keeps on giving. And as I mentioned on that show, one of these days, we've got to get them in here and sit Bruce and Scott down. I mean, Scott literally played a game against Kareem Abdul-Jabbar back in the day. I mean, it's unbelievable, right? Just think of the history, everything that he's seen through the league. And those guys are treasures.
No, it's great. It's awesome. And, you know, it's been, you know, I say it all the time, but it's so true. The Warriors beat never is boring. There's always something going on. And they have a tendency to surprise us every once in a while, and they definitely did that last night. I just got back this morning from Salt Lake City. They played at Utah last night against a Utah team that is probably lottery bound, a team that still kind of reeling from the offseason departure of Gordon Hayward. They were without probably their second best player and second or third best player in Rodney Hood. And yet here they were winning by 30 points, 129-99. It was a weird game in that the Warriors were not dialed in at all from start to finish. And, you know, we're used to seeing the Warriors starting slow, and then kind of maybe turning it on in the third quarter and running away with a win. But around the 6 minute mark of that third quarter, I turned to Mark Bedina from the Mercury News, who sits next to me, and I said, "Bro, they're not going to win this game," because it was just so clear that they just did not have it. There was no gear to shift into. You know, they were not mentally locked in. And it literally was from start to finish, to the point where even after Steve Kerr pulled his starters midway through the fourth, he called another timeout because even the bench guys couldn't get up for it. And they were, you know, playing Matador defense and just not really trying. And you look at the numbers, and they were absolutely insane. A Utah team that entered the night with the sixth worst offense in the league, shot 58.2% from the field, which is the worst opposing field goal percentage the Warriors have had since 2013, which obviously encompasses the entire Steve Kerr era. And they could not guard a guy named Joe Ingles, who, you know, maybe the average NBA fan is not super familiar with, but Joe Ingles, when he's going, can hit the three ball, and that's exactly what he did last night. He was dominant. He was 6 for 8 from three. And keep in mind, Kevin Durant, a guy who a lot of people think is going to be Defensive Player of the Year, was guarding him much of the night.
Yeah, they didn't shoot well. They didn't do anything well. They didn't handle the ball. Draymond had, you know, what, 4 or 5 turnovers. I think what was in the NBA, you're going to have these games where you just kind of lay an egg. It just, the cycle of just such a long regular season. It's probably particularly disappointing coming off the Boston game, where just the atmosphere was such a, like, a playoff intensity game. But, you know, going back to Utah, it's when you there was that one play where you had Ricky Rubio kind of on, leading a fast break, and he stopped at the three-point line, and he had an open three-pointer. And instead of taking it, he fed, I think, Gobert for a little reverse dunk.
Yeah.
And it was just interesting to watch that, because you're like, that's kind of like the Warrior. That's what the Warriors do to teams, you know? It's
right.
Just like they're in transition. They're making, you know, they had a shot, but he didn't take it and went for a better shot. And it's just, you know, every now and then the roles get reversed, and, you know.
If you watch that play, I thought that play was super telling, because he's flanked by Andre Iguodala and Klay Thompson, two of the better defenders in the league, and they didn't even move. I mean, they didn't even try.
No.
I mean, they were just like, whatever.
You got a 6 foot tall or 7 foot tall guy with the eight feet wingspan. You're like, whatever. We're just gonna give it to him.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, and I hung out afterward with some Jazz writers who I know, and they were like, you know, how upset were they in post game? And I was like, honestly, not at all. I mean,
yeah.
They never are.
Yeah.
And a lot of Warriors fans hear that and they think, oh, they don't care. And the reality is, it's not that they don't care. It's that they just have a perspective on the fact that this game doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like you look at the film of that game and you think, oh man, there's so many things we need to fix. All you need to fix on a basic level is trying.
Yeah.
If you just play hard and you just actually try, you'll fix a lot of the problems that happened last night.
Yeah. It's true. And it's you know, the Warriors fans now are so accustomed to, you know, even if, like you said earlier, even if they start slow in that third quarter, they just pick it up and then run the guys out of the gym. And when it doesn't happen, it's like, oh, no, what's wrong with them? Nothing really technically, except effort, maybe.
Yeah. And it was interesting because right before the game, Steve was asked by someone from the Salt Lake media about the fact that the Warriors tend to only play defense when they need to. And Kerr's reaction to that was, I'm okay with that.
Right.
Because, you know, we have a long haul, and, you know, as long as we're practicing good habits, it's all good. But that's a fine line, right? Because, you know, you if you're not giving consistent, you know, playoff level effort every night, then what's the line from that to what we saw last night, which was the opposite of that, which was nothing. You know, it's something that I think is actually probably good for them in the grand scheme of things, because they're going to look at that and it's going to remind them, you know what, we are the Warriors, but even when we're playing a team like the Jazz, we still need to try.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I got to say this, watching the game on TV, like I used to have to go to Utah for a couple of games every year. And it was really cool to see their uniforms, and especially the gradient reflected on the hard court too.
Yeah.
And no more green plastic seats that used to be like the signature.
I kinda liked
arena.
Those because it was kind of their thing. They've redone that whole arena in a lot of ways. Like the media room is different.
Mm-hmm.
The press row is different.
Where do you guys sit now?
We sit way high up.
Okay.
Which is a bummer.
Yeah. Because
we used to have pretty good seats right in the corner there. But it is what it is. I agree with you about the uniforms. I kind of think these alternate uniforms have been pretty cool. I'm personally a pretty big fan of the town jerseys. I think those are
absolutely
pretty cool. I think there's a reason why those are selling. That's their best selling jersey this season, which I think there's a reason for. Have you ever been to Arches? Because that was the
National Park.
The National Park.
No.
That's what the uniform and the court was an homage to.
Yeah. No, I've been to Bryce Canyon in Zion, and I just love it there. And the fact that, you know, you talked about the green, and that was really cool, but still kind of a vestige of like New Orleans and the Jazz and those colors. So it's just cool to see a color scheme that reflected more of Utah and the Red Rocks and the Canyonlands and stuff.
Yeah, I've been to Zion, Bryce, and Arches. And Zion's probably my favorite.
Yeah.
And we can't get anything. You can't get better than that.
No,
never thought I'd be
awesome
talking about that on the Warriors Off Court podcast, but you know, got to keep things interesting, right?
That's why it's Warriors Off Court. It's not always on court.
So, you know, it's interesting because while the Warriors continue to, you know, barring last night, they continue to play pretty good basketball. And the reality is, part of why last night happened, I think, is because three nights ago they had a game that. But three nights before that, they had a game that was probably the most intense regular season game outside of maybe the cupcake game last year that I've covered on this beat. It felt like the finals. It felt
right,
like that type of intensity. It was really fun to watch. Steph go head to head with Kyrie Irving. They were just trading blows throughout that game, and obviously the Warriors had a little bit more left in the tank at the end, and Steph put on what was one of his great performances, scoring 13 points in the final minute, 45, 13 of their final 14 points to carry them to that victory. He had 49 points, just an absolute masterful performance from him. So the big question from that is, are the Celtics the biggest threat to the Warriors? And I think you know my answer to that. I'm curious what yours is.
Yeah, and let's keep in mind we're talking we don't want to assume that they're going to get through the Western Conference, but we're going to look at it as a potential.
It is admittedly hard to keep that in mind, because we talk in such absolutist terms on this beat where it's like, okay, so when they make the finals, okay, when I'm working till mid-June, because I mean, my schedule is such that I've literally planned that I'm going to be working till mid-June, but you know, nothing is guaranteed in this world. And if they do make the finals,
when
they make the finals, who would they play? And I think it's gotta be the Celtics right now.
I think you'll have a lot of people in that camp. When you look at the rest of the Eastern Conference, and you know, Cleveland just was such a hot mess before Kevin Love broke his hand, and now with him gone, it's just I don't know, like, if that, where do you see that, where do you see that team right now? The Cavaliers
in complete disarray.
Yeah.
We were talking about this a couple weeks ago. I was like, you know what? It's still early. You know, maybe they'll get over it. They have LeBron. They've gone through hiccups in the past. But you look at every year since LeBron's been there, they've had one major, you know, bout of adversity each season.
Mm-hmm.
They had that early this season, and then you thought they kind of got through it and they were playing really good basketball. And then IT comes back, yeah. Isaiah Thomas, and they just are having a really tough time, you know, getting him in the flow of the offense. And I think he's getting blamed a little bit too much for what's going on there. Obviously, what's going on there is pretty deep rooted. I think it's mm-hmm. just a flawed roster. I think that team just doesn't get along well on or off the court. You see, you know, the stuff that's going on with Kevin Love and IT and Jeff Green, and they're just not, they don't seem to generally like each other.
No. Clear the air meetings during the regular season are really not a good sign.
No, and they've had a lot.
Yeah.
They've had a lot. And I'm not convinced that Tyronn Lue's the answer there. I'm not saying they should fire him mid-season, but I'm not convinced he's the guy. And then you have the whole backdrop of, you know, is LeBron going to leave? And, and you know, there's part of me that thinks, yes, LeBron's LeBron, and he can take any team to the finals. But there's also the human element of, he's probably already kind of mentally, this is speculation, but mentally checking out a little bit and realizing this probably isn't my long-term home. Mm-hmm. And how do you give your all to a team in the playoffs when you probably know you're going to be looking elsewhere within a month of that time?
Yeah, you're right about, it's always been, you know, you can never count the Cavs out no matter what they've gone through because of LeBron, because LeBron can carry a team through. But man, you look at this right now and it's, you know, they think they really miss, especially when you talk about matching up with the Warriors, Kyrie Irving. It's just, it's like he was a Warriors killer. It's, you know, it's just replacing that toughness, and you know, I don't see it on that roster.
I don't think Kyrie got the credit he deserved when he was in Cleveland, just because mm-hmm. everyone said, oh, they're making the finals because of LeBron,
right.
Oh, they won that title because of LeBron. But like you said, Kyrie has given them as much trouble as any player in this league over the past 4 years. I mean, you look at what he's done consistently. He was great in all three, you know, when he didn't really play much the first one, but the past two finals, he was elite. And you're seeing now that he's with Boston with, I think, a supporting cast that fits him much better in a lot of ways,
mm-hmm.
What he can do. And the thing about Boston that's interesting is I just love the way that roster is put together. Obviously, keep in mind that they don't have Gordon Hayward, right. but they have a really nice complementary guys. Jason Tatum, I think, is going to be a perennial all-star. I mean, he's been better as a rookie than anyone imagined. He's only 19 years old. Jaylen Brown, who I covered at Cal, yeah. and I'll be honest, when I covered him at Cal, I thought he was going to be a bust. I thought, how could this guy go number three? Because he honestly wasn't very good at Cal. But right. the thing he had going for him is he was just a physical specimen, which is why they took him number three. And
yeah, he had an NBA body already.
He had an NBA body, and he's a smart guy. And the Celtics saw that, and they took a flyer at number three in what was kind of a weak draft. And here he is 2 years later, and he's looking like a perennial all-defensive team, two-way force type guy. And I think a lot of that should be a credit to Brad Stevens and that staff. Mm-hmm. I think they're phenomenal at developing talent. I think they put guys in the right spots, and they're mm-hmm. getting the best out of him. And then you have Al Horford, who's an all-star. Yeah. And, you know, so they're legit. And they're going to be good for a long time, too. Yeah.
Speaking of Jaylen Brown, he seemed to question whether or not he should have been an all-star injury replacement, which,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
cool, you're having a good season, but come on now.
Well, I don't know. Draymond Green thinks that Jaylen Brown should be an all-star. I mean, you look at what he's doing defensively on, you know, the second-best team in the league. You could make an argument.
You could make an argument. It's just, you know, the good thing is he's got plenty of time to get there.
No, for sure. He's 21 years old. They're going to be good for a long time. I mean, they're bringing Gordon Hayward back.
Yeah.
All their core guys are either in their prime or, you know, younger than their prime, outside of maybe Al Horford, but he's still playing as good of basketball as he's ever played. And so that's going to be something to watch. You know, could this be the next quote-unquote rivalry we're witnessing? Bruce Jenkins wrote a great column earlier in the season outlining that, and I think it's it's being lived out right now. And I think the question also has been, yes, they're the biggest threat in the Eastern Conference probably, but are they the biggest threat period? And we just saw pretty recently them not only get pushed by Houston, but lose to Houston in Houston, and then a few days later get pushed at home by Boston. Based off that sample size, what do you think between those two teams? Who do you think is a bigger threat, Houston or Boston?
I'll take Boston, and especially over the long term, or I think right now. This is still a team that's missing Gordon Hayward, and I like the way they play. I think they've got a good young coach that can relate to the players and issues that come up. It can't go wrong either way. I guess that sets the stage for what hopefully is a really good playoff.
I think that it's Boston for a really simple reason. They play defense. They're the best defensive team in the league. And if you look at it, they're the only team that has consistently given the Warriors offense real trouble. I mean, the Warriors scored, I mean, this is low for them, 109 points the other night. They scored 88 earlier in the season at Boston. Boston knows how to give them trouble and how to make things difficult for them. Houston doesn't. Houston wants to outscore them. And it's hard to beat the Warriors when you're trying to outscore them.
That's what I was going to say. It's that the game is similar, and they're not quite as good as the Warriors are about executing that offense.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's really why I actually think that Boston Warriors finals potentially would be good TV. And I actually think it could go, you know, maybe not seven, but definitely five or six. So there's also been a lot going on in the league, just from a broad standpoint. You know, a lot of injuries, trades, obviously. The big one the other night being the Blake Griffin trade to Detroit. What did you think of that trade?
I thought it just kind of came out of nowhere, even though, I don't know, I was just surprised. For so long, it's... The Clippers haven't been able to get over that hump. Obviously, they traded Chris Paul in the offseason. It's just that maybe because also the years that I covered, it was so nice to see the Warriors and Clippers rise up together from these were the league cellar dwellers and laughingstocks for so long. And it was nice to see, in 2009 was kind of the game changer when the Warriors drafted Steph Curry and the Clippers drafted Blake Griffin. And then, Chris Paul came and, we had just the two teams, the nucleus of both teams being built and seeing them rise together. Lob City versus the Splash Brothers or whatever. And it's just it never really reached its peak, I feel like. Right. You had that playoff series where the Clippers won, I think it was 2013, 2014, and you just thought that this was going to be a rivalry for years to come. And then the next year, the Clippers lose that 3-1 series lead to Houston, and it just seemed like from there they couldn't make it work, right? It was like was going to be the Western Conference Finals rematch, everybody seemed to think was going to happen, and it didn't. And so it's...
I liked the move for both teams. And the reason is I actually think that obviously the Pistons got the better part of the deal, and I think you can make an argument the Clippers maybe could have gotten even more back for Blake Griffin. I like Avery Bradley. I think Tobias Harris is having a nice season. But I just think they could have gotten more. But I like what it represents, because what it is it's basically a reset. And the Clippers were at a point where they probably needed to press that button. They probably should have even a year ago. And they were kind of in that gray area. Mm-hmm. It was like, hey, we can do enough to still be kind of relevant. We can still, at least be 500. But we're in a state of the NBA where it's almost worse to be 500 than it is to be the worst team in the league. Because you're not getting the assets. You're not getting the future assets.
Yes.
Because if you're like what the 76ers did and you're the worst team in the league for a few years, you pile up number one or number two picks, and then you have Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons to build around.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I think I thought it was an inevitable move. There's actually been a lot of chatter after this too about, everyone likes to speculate, and everyone knows that Jerry West loves Klay Thompson, and they're saying, okay, they're gonna put themselves in a position to have all this cap space and go after Klay in a couple years when he's a free agent, which I think they're gonna do. That's gonna happen. I mean, things can change. I don't think he's necessarily gonna be a Clipper, but
right. He
is from LA. He does have a good relationship with Jerry West. It's a fair thing to speculate about.
Yeah, well, I mean, for the Clippers, and what do they do now with DeAndre Jordan and guys like Lou Williams and stuff? Is it, do they completely tear it down and get assets?
I think we're going to see DeAndre Jordan gone. I wouldn't be surprised if he was gone at the trade deadline, even. And people have even mentioned him with the Warriors. I don't think that's possible, but it is an interesting proposition. He is actually best friends with Kevin Durant, and I mean, best friends as in not NBA best friends, but like actual best friends. Mm-hmm. Kevin has said he would be the best man at his wedding when he gets married. So it's interesting to think about. I don't think it's going to happen, but we are only a week away from the trade deadline. I don't think the Warriors are going to be a huge mover in that, but they might. I would not be surprised at all if they made at least a small move. And by small move, I mean, maybe trading a JaVale McGee for a second round pick or a future asset and freeing up a roster spot for another guard, just because they really care about having a balanced roster, and they don't have one right now. They have too many bigs, especially with how the league is trending towards small ball. I mean, it's kind of helping them right now because, Jordan Bell's out, so JaVale was able to get some minutes last night with Kevon Looney and Bell out last night. But for the long term, I think they want to even out that roster. And so it wouldn't surprise me if they traded maybe a JaVale, who I think still has some market value for a team who needs a center, a team like Milwaukee. There's several other teams who need bigs, for a future asset. And maybe you sign Quinn Cook, who's still been killing it in the G League, to that final roster spot, and there's several other of those bench guys who I think are expendable.
Yeah,
guys like Kevon Looney, and
he's really struggled to find a place this year.
He's had an interesting year. I mean, he's been super in and out of the rotation, Steve Kerr loves him. I don't know if you've watched an interview of him talking about Kevon Looney, but he doesn't talk more passionately about any player than Kevon Looney. Mm-hmm. And it's just because he kind of, I think, identifies a little bit with Kevon Looney, because Steve was a guy who was in and out of the rotation a lot, and he knows, he really cares about guys who are in that spot, who take it seriously, who are professionals. And Kevon is that. He lost almost 30 pounds this summer. He's taking it seriously. He's better. I personally think he's kind of a niche player in the NBA. And as you know, I just wanted to cover the league. Niche players are expendable because you need to be in the perfect situation. And if you're not, you're basically James Michael McAdoo, who is a niche player. He had like one go-to skill, which was he could guard multiple positions, which is basically what Kevon Looney's skill is. He can also rebound. But James Michael McAdoo is now averaging 8 points per game in the G League.
Right.
And he won 2 titles with this team. I kind of think Kevon's similar in that way.
You know, what I thought was interesting, or something you just said caught my mind, which is, you know, maybe they trade some of these guys for a second round pick. We all know that they've had a pretty good stretch of finding some gems in that second round. In past years, they've bought their second round picks for whatever, $3 million. So, here you trade a guy and, you know, maybe you don't need to, you know, you don't need to find your own opportunities to buy into to the draft.
The Warriors have looked over all the analytics. They know that the highest value pick you can have is like early in the 30s. That's mm-hmm. obviously where they got Draymond. That's where they got Jordan Bell. That's where they got Patrick McCaw, because it's not a guaranteed deal.
Right.
But, you know, there's almost always really high quality players left at that point in the draft. And especially this year, where it's one of the deepest drafts we've ever seen, there's going to be NBA contributors in the early 30s.
Right. Yeah. It's just with the way that the NBA rookie salary structure / draft works, is that all those guys that go in the first rounds get guaranteed contracts, and there's no negotiating. It's slotted in how much they're going to make. So in the second round, they're not guaranteed. And just like what you said, because of that too, you obviously hit the jackpot with a guy like Draymond. But if you have a handful of those guys and they don't pan out, it's not like you're tied in. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like the risk reward ratio.
You can also have more flexibility with what you can do mm-hmm. with that contract. You know, just to help you with the books, help you with whatever your situation is with the bigger name guys. You can work it out so that you can backload a guy for a year or something like that.
Right.
Whereas, like you said, you're locked in that first round.
Yeah.
So,
which is, it makes it tough for the players that are getting drafted in the second round, but it's, you know, from a team perspective, it makes a lot of sense.
For sure. But it's been, you know, we're already over halfway through the season. We have the All-Star break coming up. I'm personally kind of ready to take that little bit of a breather. Won't be that much of a breather, because there are 4 All-Stars once again in Los Angeles, and we're going to have several people down there in LA, which will be a lot of fun. Yeah. But until then, we'll definitely touch base next week before All-Star break. I think I'll be in Portland for Valentine's, which will be good. So we'll stay locked and loaded with Warriors Off Court, and we're going to be on iTunes pretty soon. I promise.
We promise this time.
We have a graphic. We have it all in the works. It's happening. It's really happening. I've gotten a lot of questions.
Stay with us.
And so next week, we'll definitely subscribe to iTunes. In the meantime, get ready to subscribe to iTunes.
This show is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Our theme music is Thank You for Playing by Ryan Little, courtesy of the Free Music Archive. This show is produced by me, Janie, and Fernando Diaz. For more Warriors coverage, you can follow us on Twitter at @con_cron, CON_CHRON, and Janie Hugh at JANNY_HU, Janie_Hugh. Check out all of our coverage at sfchronicle.com.